Good morning. Whether you are here in person or checking us out online, I have to believe that you're either laughing or crying to the realness of the second part of that video and how we have all experienced far too many of those moments in our lives and in our journey through parenting. This morning, we continue with part two of this four-part series that we launched last week that we are calling Parenting in the 21st Century. And if you're checking us out for the very first time or just jumping into this series for the very first time, this is all you need to know about this entire series. You see, this series is designed for those of you in this room and online who find themselves responsible for raising babies or toddlers or preteens or teenagers or even grown adults. That this is a series that's designed for you as you walk through parenting at this stage in your life. But it's a series that's designed for more than just you. It's also a series that's designed for those of you who feel like you're coming out of your parenting phase. That you feel like most of that season is in your rear view mirror, and yet what you fail to recognize is that you never stop being a parent. Is that in your future, even as your kids grow up, no matter how old they get or how far away they move, that day after day, there are opportunities that lie in front of you in setting an incredible example of the steps that are necessary to take as adults in this world and as Christ followers. But it isn't just designed for the two of you. You see, this series is also designed for a third group of you. It's designed for those of you who might one day be responsible for raising babies or toddlers or preteens or teenagers. That around here, we believe with all of our heart that God has a plan for your dreams and your desires as it pertains to your heart for becoming a parent. And even if you're sitting here this morning and you're saying, in that category of my life, all I've experienced is heartbreak and pain at the near misses and the almost moments of wanting to be a parent and yet being told again and again and again, not yet, that we believe with all of our hearts that God is bringing about a plan in your future and in your story. It may not be the plan that you thought. It may not be the way in which you wanted it to come about. Take it from someone who has journeyed that path that you're walking through, but I believe with all of my heart that God has something incredible in store, that you won't see the fullness of his plan until you've walked through it. You see, this series is designed for every single one of us in this room to begin to instill some principles inside of us that lay this foundation for us to begin to start or finish this thing called parenting in a much better way than what we're presently journeying through. Because even if you aren't a parent yet, what every parent in the room would testify to is this. And parents, you are free to say amen if you want. That I wish when I started this thing called parenting that I would have known some of these things before I held that baby in my arms for the very first time. Because there are so many things that I've missed, and now all I can do is finish the very best that I can. But our journey would have been so much better if we'd have had these things before we even started. And this series is designed to set each and every one of us up with that. But the truth, maybe the difficult truth that this entire series acknowledges is this, is that parenting always changes and is always challenging. That here we sit in 2022 having to acknowledge that parenting in 2022 really even isn't the same as parenting in 2012. That over the course of the last decade, the world has changed and the world continues to change. And because of that, every passing year, it presents new challenges to our parenting and to how we move forward. But what if I told you there was a way for us to prepare for the changes and the challenges of parenting in the 21st century? For us to begin taking healthy steps forward that allows us to be prepared for the moment that smacks every single one of us in the face when we strap that baby in their car seat for the very first time, and for some crazy reason, they allow us to take that kid home by ourselves? You know the moment that I'm talking about. The moment where you realize that just because you had a parent doesn't mean you know anything about being one. The moment where you realize that just because I was a child doesn't mean I know anything about raising one. But in order for us to step wholeheartedly into this challenge and even this opportunity and responsibility that lies before us in the difficulties of parenting, what we must acknowledge is this, is that every single one of us, no matter what stage of parenting we find ourselves in, before, in the middle, or in the aftermath, every single one of us have growth that is possible within this thing called parenting. That every single one of us have room to grow. And no matter what that person beside you, their social media posts seem to communicate about how perfect their life is, check this out. Their kids ain't perfect. Their life ain't perfect. And their parenting certainly isn't perfect. Every single one of us have some growing up to do as it pertains to our parenting in this life and our leadership of our kids, be it babies or be it grown-ups. And taking the correct steps forward to grow in our parenting means that we have to start with setting the right foundation. And that's what we did last week. That we uncovered this foundation for our parenting, this belief system, mindset that every single one of us must have when it pertains to our parenting in order for us to move forward in the healthiest way possible. And what we said was this, is that great parents understand the responsibility they have to oftentimes plant their feet and their heart and even their compassion right smack dab in the middle of what's real while continuing to point to what's ideal. Planting their feet right smack dab in the middle of the messiness and the brokenness and the mistakes that come along with family dynamics in the 21st century, while all the while never losing sight of pointing our kids towards the ideal, wanting better for our kids, wanting our kids to experience the rich and satisfying life that Jesus wanted us to experience on this earth. You see, this is what Jesus did so incredibly. That when he put on flesh and blood and he stepped onto the pages of history as mankind, Jesus stepped right into the middle of the mess. The mess that was this world, the brokenness that was this world. And yet what Jesus did was so uncommon because it was what no other religious leader of his day was doing. You see, you know what the religious leaders of the day did when they stepped into the messes? They condemned every mess, every mistake, and pushed people down. And yet Jesus decided to flip the script for the sake of our futures and for the sake of our future leadership within our relationships of our marriage, our parenting, our aunting, our uncling, etc., etc., etc. And this is the way that Jesus flip the script. In Luke chapter 11, verse 46, Jesus says this in a conversation he's having with the religious leaders about the way in which they condemn other people in the midst of their realness and their brokenness. This is so good. Jesus says this, "And you experts in the law, woe to you." I don't know about y'all, but I don't want to be on the other end of a woe to you from the God of the universe. And that's what the religious experts got. "Woe to you because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you yourselves will not lift one finger to help them." You see, in this moment, Jesus flipped the script as a perfect parent to you and I, and he decided to condemn the condemners and die for the condemned. He stepped right into the middle of the messiness and the brokenness, and then he went to the cross to wipe away the brokenness. He recognized what was real, and yet all the while held it as his responsibility to continue to point you and I towards the ideal, towards something better that was possible in our futures. And he began to set this precedent for our lives, that as great parents, the responsibility we hold is the same. That when it comes to our kids and raising our kids, no matter what stage of life they are in, we must be people who are willing to get into the real, but not be so consumed with the real that we condemn our kids to the exact same outcome we are presently experiencing, but that we become capable of pointing to the ideal, but not so consumed with the ideal that we ignore our own messes and our own brokenness and our own mistakes to the point that every time we instruct our kids, all they see in us is a hypocrite. Because we were unwilling to use our own mistakes as a teaching tool in their lives. You see, what great parents recognize is this mindset, that my past shortcomings and mistakes can be the greatest catalyst to my kids' future. Hello? Y'all okay? You see, that's one of the most difficult steps for us to take as parents, is to be willing to lead in such a way that we are willing to swallow our pride and acknowledge that we have lived our lives, sometimes within our marriage, our finances, outside of the ideal. But just because we've lived outside of the ideal doesn't mean I'm going to stop pointing you as my child towards the ideal in your future, because I want better for you than what I'm presently living through. I want your marriage to be better than my marriage was. I want your kids to experience better than what you're presently experiencing because of me. We stand in the middle of the real, point to the ideal. And here's the important part, y'all. Even if the ideal isn't possible in our own lives, even if we as parents, because of our circumstances, can't obtain the ideal, we still point our kids towards it every step of the way. And what we underlined last week was this, is that when it comes to acknowledging the realness of family dynamics, that should come second nature to us as Christians. Why? Because when we pick up God's word, what we find is this. We find literally, y'all, literally zero examples of healthy family dynamics within this book. Like, families were screwed up, y'all. You want to see the definition of putting the fun in dysfunction? This book is littered with it, y'all. Even Jesus' own family was dysfunctional. Don't believe me? Jesus' family, they went on a family trip together, and they spent a few days on this family trip, and then it was time to come home, and so they pack up all their stuff, and they start making this journey back home, only to realize we left Jesus back at the rest stop. They had left Jesus behind on their family vacation. Like, Jesus' siblings, this is how messed up the family dynamics were. Jesus' siblings literally believed, excuse me on this one, that Jesus was a whack job. That's what they were like, this dude is crazy, because here is our brother thinking that he is the Son of God. And y'all, put yourself in those shoes, right? How difficult would it be for your sibling to convince you that he was God? Ain't happening, right? And they were like, there ain't no way this dude is God, until, you know, he went and did that thing. You know what I'm talking about, right? Where he said he was going to die and rise again, and then he actually went off and did it. But Jesus, within his family and those family dynamics, experienced the messiness and the brokenness of doing family in this world. And yet Jesus did something incredible. While he didn't directly talk about parenting in his time here on this earth frequently, what Jesus did was this. He made this correlation that when it comes to our lives and our relationships, I'm going to teach you how to do relationship well. And ultimately what that means is this. If you can do relationship well, then you can do relationship with your kids well. And so I'm going to not reset parenting. I'm going to reset around New Testament behavior. And ultimately what you get out of that is, when you reset your behavior around what I'm teaching you, then you will begin to reset your parenting around that as well. And you'll be able to take steps forward when you change your behavior to align with the things that I'm laying down. And the reason that Jesus attacked our behavior and went after that and desired change when it came to our behavior is because Jesus knew what you and I have come to know as we have either parented for any amount of time or been parented for any amount of time. And that is that behavior is essential to our success in parenting. Don't believe me? Think back to when you were a kid, or for some of y'all, you don't even have to think back. You're a middle school student, you're a high school student, you're a young adult who's still living at home. You see, for every single one of us who have lived in relationship with our parents, what we would testify to is this, is that your parents' behavior, not their advice, ultimately determined whether you wanted to be like them, and furthermore, whether you even wanted to be with them. Am I right? Your parents' behavior, not their advice, determined whether you wanted to someday be like your parents and whether right now you even want to be with your parents. Like, your parents could have been incredible advice givers when you were growing up. And yet, if they treated you poorly, act poorly, or acted in direct contrast to the things they were telling you to do, you didn't listen to a word they had to say, did you? Well, maybe for some of you it didn't matter if they acted well or not. You didn't listen to a word they had to say either. That's teenage years. But our behavior ultimately dictates our success as parents, because what happens is this: our behavior always dictates the amount of respect we get from other people. That's outside of parenting, but it also encompasses parenting. That how much people respect us is determined by our behavior in our relationship with them. And here's the next step down the line. Respect always breeds influence. Whether or not I have your respect determines whether or not I have influence in your life. That's the way it works within your marriage. That's the way it works within your family. That's the way it works with your siblings. That's the way it works with your friends. That's the way it works in your office place. That's the way it works as a boss, how your employees look at you. If they respect you, determines whether or not you have influence in their life. And ultimately, what that means is this, is that our influence in our kids' lives and for their futures is dictated by the way in which we behave around and to our children. Behavior is a big deal. But when parenting gets challenging, the question that rises to the surface is this: how in those difficult moments do I change my behavior? Because it's so easy to fly off the handles when my kid hasn't listened to me for the 16th time. It's so easy for me to lose my cool and to fall into the same rut of behaving the same way in my relationships with them again and again and again, and ultimately creating this fissure in my relationship with them that lasts for the rest of their life. How do I change that behavior from this day forward? And it's simple. You see, around here, you've heard me say this quite often, that we believe with all of our heart that following Jesus makes life better. But that isn't all that it does. Following Jesus also makes you better at life. And ultimately, what that means is that I believe with all of my heart that if following Jesus makes you better at life in its entirety, then ultimately following Jesus makes you better at parenting. And here's how. Because following Jesus, if we choose to really follow him, demands one thing of us that ultimately changes our behavior in every relationship. Did you catch that? If we really choose to follow Jesus, it changes our behavior in one specific way. It demands that we change our behavior in one specific way that ultimately changes every relationship of our life. You see, following Jesus requires this one foundational principle: others first. If we really consider ourselves to be followers of Jesus, the foundational principle that he lays down for us, the behavior that must change in every relationship of our lives, he says, people will know whether you are my disciple or not by whether or not you are capable of others firsting, loving other people before yourself. You see, before Jesus left this earth, he laid down this new covenant command that reset New Testament behavior from that day, guess what, y'all, all the way up until May 15th, 2022. You see, Jesus left us with this, that if you want your relationships to get better, this is what must change. In John chapter 13, verse 34, he says, now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other. And I don't know about y'all, but if you guys are anything like me, you're like, I think I would have been good if he just would have left it at those three words. Because that gives me the freedom to fill in the blanks, right? Like, I can kind of dictate what love really means and who deserves love and who doesn't deserve love. But Jesus doesn't just leave it at that. He's like, no. I know you're going to fill in your own blanks, so let me just go ahead and fill in the blank for you and show you what the example is of how you are supposed to love others. He says this: just as I have loved you, you should love other people. And when Jesus spoke what John wrote down in this moment, they didn't even fully realize how far Jesus was going to go and how sacrificial Jesus was going to make others firsting in his life and in relationships. You see, Jesus was like, I was selfless to the point of death, sacrificing my perfection on the altar of your sin, putting your brokenness ahead of my perfectness. But y'all, I get it, okay? I'm not naive to this. I live this every single day just like you do. I get that the very place where our selfishness and self-centeredness rise to a place where it is off the charts is when we are handed the responsibility of raising other little human beings. And here's why. Because other little human beings tend to drive us crazy because they are broken just like I am broken, and they kind of act just like I act, and they walked onto this earth with the same desire that I walked onto this earth with. What's in it for me? And I want it my way. We all go around demanding that everybody is Burger King and that we can have it our own way. And when we live our lives according to that, what ends up happening is there's a battle of epic proportion that is brewing of the wills of two people butting heads because I want it my way. No, I want it my way. And that's ultimately in our parenting relationships what has the tendency to happen, that rises our self-centeredness and our selfishness to a whole new level. And at that moment, when we feel that rising up inside of us and our ego and our pride beginning to take over and our dominance wanting to rise to the surface and our relationship with our kids, ultimately we have a choice to make. And ultimately it's more than that. We have a statement to make. A statement that will stick with our kids for the rest of their lives at what or who comes first. My reputation, my ego, or your future. About 25 years ago, my dad and I, every single summer, would take a father-son fishing trip. And we went with four of our closest friends, fathers and sons, and we'd drive about 15 hours up until the wilderness of Canada. Like wilderness, I'm talking about, we would go to outlakes, and it's like, do not cut your leg and need stitches because we have no idea where the closest hospital is. And we'd spend a week out there roughing it, not shaving, you know, going to the bathroom in an outhouse, all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about? And my dad, I don't know, like there were some times he was just not a smart guy, I guess, because our fathers got the bright idea, like, this is man's week, and so we want you to partake in everything that is man. And I guess they never watched The Christmas Story, because their first ticket of action was, in order for this to be man's week, you're not just going to fish all week and get your hands dirty, but we're also going to buy you a gun. And so they're like, all right, every single kid gets a BB gun. And they even bought me a slingshot. Like, you could put BBs in this thing and slingshot this thing. And so one day we were out and we were just having fun. It was just all of us boys that were out. All the dads were in the house. And we were shooting stuff. We had cans on limbs and we were doing target practice. And frankly, we were shooting stuff we shouldn't have been shooting. I mean, it was like target practice of the propane tank and stuff like that. And one of my friends went inside and began to tell his father the things that we were doing that we shouldn't have been doing. And I watched my dad walk out into the front porch and say, Ben, I need you to come in here for a second. And everything inside, I was in the middle of nowhere, but everything inside of me was like, just run the opposite direction and don't stop. Because this ain't gonna end well. And as soon as my father calls me in, the likelihood of me making it back to the United States is slim to none. But he called me in and he took me into our shared bedroom and we sat down on his bed. And my dad looked at me and he began to outline everything that this other father had told him about all the things that we were doing that frankly we shouldn't have been doing. And I sat there in absolute silence just waiting for the hammer to drop. And my dad concluded every single wrong thing that I had been doing outside, which was accurate and correct, but he never asked me if I had done that, or was I doing those things? And so I just sat there in silence, not speaking a word. And looking back on that day, what I recognized is my dad knew full well that those were the things I was doing. My dad knew I was making poor choices. And yet as we sat there in silence, my dad said something that to this day I have not forgotten. 25 years later, and I will never forget it. In fact, I need to remember it oftentimes when it comes to my own parenting. As we sat there on the bed, my dad looked at me after all of these indictments, and he said, Ben, after this father told me all the things that you had done wrong, I looked at him and I said, you worry about parenting your kids, and I'll worry about parenting mine. And I was like, where's the second part, Dad? sat in silence for what felt like an eternity, and he said, you can go back out and play. You see, in that moment, my father made a choice that was ultra rare for my father. But my father was communicating this message into my life, into my present, into my future. But Ben, I want you to know that in this moment, in the eyes of this other father, my reputation, my ego was on the line. Because my child was acting up, and it was reflecting poorly on me. And yet what I want you to see in this moment, Ben, is that when it comes to our relationship, I'm willing to put you before my ego. I'm willing to choose you before my reputation. And it was this moment where I've clung to this in my life, and I wish that I was far better in the heated moments and the disappointing moments and the moments where it feels like my kids acting up or influencing my ego and my reputation, that I recognized in those moments what my father recognized in that critical moment. You see, what my father recognized is this, is that oftentimes in our parenting, the reality is the defining moment is far more powerful than a teachable moment. Sometimes in our parenting, a defining moment is way more powerful than a teachable moment. And as great parents, we have to be willing to step back and to be able to balance that tension. Parenting is all about tension points to be balanced. And to know when, this is a moment for me to communicate a different message. I've disciplined, told my kids what was wrong, tried to guide them in the right direction. But this is a moment where I have an opportunity to communicate to them that you will always come before my pride. You will always come before my ego. I'm willing to put you first in this moment. And you see, here's the incredible part. My dad didn't always get this right, but when my dad did get it right, what I would attest to is this, is it was a perfect representation of who Jesus was and what Jesus did. Why do I believe that with all of my heart? Well, Paul defines it perfectly. He gives us this perfect picture of what Jesus did from the moment he put on flesh and blood and stepped into human form on this earth. In Paul's letter to the church in Philippi, he wrote this. I love this. This is so good. Though he was God, talking about Jesus, he didn't think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He gave up his ego. He gave up what was rightfully his to take on the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. You know what this is saying? Jesus set this example as a perfect parent, that he did not use his standing as something to leverage for his own good. Even though he had the right to, he gave it up for me, for you, so that, come on back, so that in turn, when we become parents, we would be willing to give it up as well. Hello. Y'all okay? Jesus gave up his ego, his reputation, his pride for you and I in our brokenness, so that in our kids' brokenness, we also would be willing to give it up. To prove the point that you, as a relational being, as my child, come before my ego. But while my parents were willing to put myself before their ego, their pride, their reputation, what my parents also understood was this. And we have to keep coming back to this, y'all, throughout this series, because this is too good. Like, this is too important for our families, for our marriages. What my parents consistently modeled and made a priority was the understanding that while we are willing to put you before our ego, Ben Carver, you will never be the center of our lives. Hello. You will never be the center of our marriage. Your baseball tournaments, your traveling, your activities, us being the chauffeur, it will never become the end-all be-all of this family or our marriage. They set this example in our lives for the sake of my present marriage. Our marriage was here first, and it will stay first. And maybe some of the best advice that I ever got from another pastor, he was talking about advice when it comes to parenting, and when you actually bring children into this world, what you have to remember. And he said this. He said, what you have to remember in order to take healthy steps forward in your parenting and ultimately for setting the example, the greatest thing you can do for your kids is love your wife well, is you have to remember this every single day. You were already a family before your child existed. Woo! Okay? This was no Jerry Maguire moment, right? But the first time you held that baby in your arms, you complete me. No, you were already a family before that child existed. But let's not discount it. They're a welcome addition to something that already existed. There are areas and moments in which you're going to put them in front of some of the things in your life, but they were never meant to be the center that every other planet revolves around in your life. Because when you start doing that, ultimately you start costing your marriage. And, hang on, y'all, when you start costing your marriage, you ultimately start costing your kids. Y'all okay? You see, that's the example that Jesus laid down. It's the example that he laid down in this others firsting mentality. That changing our behavior to others firsting will impact in a positive way every relationship we enter into. But here's what's so cool. While Jesus laid this like 30,000 foot view premise of new behavior, a couple decades later, a guy by the name of Paul stepped onto the pages of history. And Paul made this determination that with this New Testament behavior that Jesus laid out and loving others just as I have loved you, I want to put handlebars to that. So I want to give you tangible examples of how you put that into practice within your family dynamics right here, right now. And that's what Paul set out to do. And he set out to do it really well when he continued to make these one another statements. You know what I'm talking about? Like forgive one another, encourage one another, share in one another's burdens, submit to one another. But his most famous statement with handlebars when it comes to love and being in relationship with other people comes in this letter he wrote, the first letter he wrote to the church in Corinth. And I'm guessing that y'all, whether you've been in church in a long time or not, you've heard this like at every single wedding ceremony that you've ever been to or every single time you hear the church talk about marriage, they always come back to this one sentiment where Paul begins to lay out all the different steps it takes to love people well. And yet where I want to start is the very place that Paul started, because here's what Paul realized, and hang on to this. Paul realized that if you can't do this first one well, you won't be able to do all the rest of them. Woo! But I'm strategically putting this one first. In my first three words, I'm putting this one first because all the rest of them ultimately will rest on this first one. You see, here's where Paul starts. This is the foundational piece that he lays out there for those of us who are, who feel like we were, or for those of us who one day will be parents. Paul said, love is patient. Come on, Paul. Seriously? You had to go there first? You had to make that one the one that all the rest of them rest on? Because I don't know about y'all, but if your parenting journeys look anything like mine, my parenting journey has been littered with far too many opportunities for patience that have been failed upon. My kids would say amen. But this one is so difficult and so challenging because of some of the reasons we talked about earlier, right? We have been stricken with the responsibility of raising little human beings that kind of look like us and act like us and are just as messed up as us and came into this world wanting it their way, just like we want it our way. And I don't know in the middle of all that how to remain patient. And Paul really defines it perfectly. When Paul talks about patience, what Paul is specifically talking about is pace. Paul's talking about pace. And he's talking about the speed in which you move in your relationship with other people. That if you really love other people, the first step that you must take in order to do all the rest of them, right? He goes on and on. Love is kind, right? Love does not boast. It is not envious. He says you can't do any of those things if you aren't moving at the same pace as the people you love. There's no way you can show all those things to them logically if you're way out here and they're way back here, right? That this is about, in your parenting journey, being willing to walk and move at the same pace as your kids are presently moving. No matter how frustrated you might be that they're still crawling when they should be walking. And you see, tangibly, we've all walked that path, right? Like when our kids were 18 months old and they were taking their first steps and just learning to really walk on their own without holding on to anything, when we walked with them, did you walk with your kids like this? Like, come on, I don't care if your knees are getting skinned, I'm just dragging you along at my pace. No, right? Children's services would have been called really quickly on that one. What did we do? We crouched down and we held their hand and we waddled along with them at their exact same pace so that our children knew, I'm right here. I'm walking with you. I'm supporting you. I'm not out in front of you. I'm not dragging you. You're not in harm. I know this is the pace you need to walk at, and I want you to continue to take another step forward and another step forward. And the way in which you do that is if I walk beside you and walk at the same pace as you. You see, for Krista and I, we've learned this in a whole new way, in a whole new facet within our parenting. Some of you know our youngest son. Brantley is 4 years old. And at 4.5 years old, Brantley still really isn't talking. He's not really able to communicate words in the way that most of y'all would understand. And as we've walked this journey with Brantley over the course of the last 6 to 8 months, what we've recognized is that he's finally starting to try. Like, he's trying to communicate things. He's trying to express himself. But what we've noticed about Brantley is that Brantley gets ridiculously frustrated when he feels like he's not understood. And to the normal human being, it's like, yeah, I'm not understanding you because you're not understandable. But what we've recognized is that in order for us to really understand Brantley, that we have to stop the things that we're doing and moving at our own pace, and we have to be willing to look at him and make eye contact with him and to see the gestures that he's making and the things that he's motioning to in the same way he's saying this word that to normal people wouldn't be understandable, that now we've heard him say this and repeat it and point to it and now say it that way without this vowel in it or this consonant in it. And now we know what he's talking about. And now as we do that and we slow our pace to focus on him and where he's at and where he's moving in his language, what we've noticed is this, is that when it comes to Krista and I and some of his teachers who really understand him, there are moments where he'll just talk a mile a minute, like, now you understand me and now I want you to hear me and now I want to try to say new things, that there is step by step being taken when we become people who are willing to slow our pace to the pace in which he is moving. And you see, the reality is somewhere along the way, as our kids grow up, our expectations grow that you move at the same pace as us as adults. It's like, you're 14, you're 16, you should be walking at the same pace as me now. And yet what we miss as it pertains to real life is this: they haven't gone through the same stuff that you have gone through. They don't yet see the world or the circumstances of the world in the same way you see them at. Even though they're grown and they've got mustaches now, they're not willing to go through life at the same pace as you are yet. They still need you to slow down. And the reason that pace is so important is this, is because we know this about every relationship of our lives. When two people are moving at their own paces, there is always one inevitable outcome: separation. When two people move at their own paces, separation always enters the equation. That I'm up here and they're back here. And we can't effectively do relationship and do life well if we are separated. It's the very reason that Jesus set the example of putting on flesh and blood and moving through life on this earth at our pace, even though he had every right to move at his own pace. He chose not to, because that's how much he desired relationship with us, and that's how much he wanted us to experience growth and step forward in our time here on earth. And so he sacrificed what was rightfully his in order to help us get something better. Parenting 101. That is how we love our kids well. That is how we do pace well. That is how we love with patience so that we can love with every other thing on the list that Paul outlines later. But Paul is like, Ben Carver, I know you. You're going to struggle with this one most. And so I know this isn't good enough. Let me call you out specifically. And just a few chapters later, in a different letter that Paul writes in Colossians chapter 3, he looks at us, dads, and he says, dads, you know this if you look close enough. Your wife is a godsend when it comes to patience with your kids. Your fuse can oftentimes be short. And so let me drive this one home and the importance of this one home in your life and in your parenting relationships. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 21, he says, fathers, do not aggravate your children, or some translations say exasperate your children, or they will become discouraged. Don't push your children to the point of exhaustion, or they will become discouraged. You know what Paul is talking about here? That word discouragement can literally be defined as to stop taking steps forward. Hello, fathers. Do not push your kids to the breaking point. Because if you do, there may come a day where they stop taking steps forward and start taking steps backwards. Encourage? Sure. Challenge? Absolutely. Inspire? Heck yes. But push to the point of exhaustion beneath the weight of unrealistic expectations? No. And if you're anything like me, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, but Ben, I have to push my kids. Because if I don't push my kids, they won't turn out. Turn out what? What lies beneath the surface of that comment, at least in my heart, is this. I have to push my kids because if I don't, they won't turn out the way I want them to turn out. On, y'all, is that really the goal of our parenting? Or would we rather challenge and inspire our kids to turn out the way they've been created to turn out? Do you know that studies show the number one contributor in our world to relational and professional success is self-awareness? The number one contributor to relational and professional success in our world is self-awareness. Do you know what that means? Successful people are people who grow up to know the things they're good at and in turn also know the things they're not good at. And then to be given the freedom to pursue the things they are good at and that they have been called to. The things they are interested in, even if their parents are not. I don't even have to say y'all okay to that one. Great parents parent with that kind of patience to recognize that our kids were not meant to do or be called to the same purpose that you were. Hello. That they were meant to change the world in their own unique way. As arrows shot out into the world to be world changers in ways, frankly, that you cannot. And ultimately, as parents, deep down, don't we want that? For them to change the world in even greater ways than we were capable of changing it. About 18 years ago, as I was getting ready to head off to college and beginning to really make tangible decisions about what I was going to do with my life, I had this moment where I recognized everything I had planned on wasn't how my life was going to turn out. And some of you have heard parts of this story before, but at 17, I can still remember having this epiphany. Up until that point, you know, as you go through high school, you go on the visits, and it's like, what do you want to do with your life? Okay, go spend a day there. This is the path that you're headed on. And up until that point, like, I had thought, I love science, I love math, I'm going into the medical field. What seems logical is I'm going to go into dentistry or orthodontistry or whatever that looks like, and that's what I was set on. And with that, and that direction that I wanted to go with my life, my parents were absolutely ecstatic. Because what my dad recognized was this: you're not going to have to take some of the lumps in life financially that we had to take. You're going to be set if you walk into this field and do this with your life. And my dad was happy about that because he didn't want me to experience some of those things he had experienced. And at 17 years old, I began to feel this tug on my life. Like, I just don't think that's what I'm really being called to. I felt this tug in my heart of knowing the impact that the church, the local church, had had on my life and on the city around me, and wanting to continue to further that cause and be a part of that mission, believing that the local church was the hope of the world, and how could I be a part of that and bringing hope to a hurting world? As I began to recognize that in my life, I knew there was a time that was going to come in which I was going to have to break the news to my parents. And one dinner, I had worked up the courage. And it was just the three of us. My siblings were much older. They had moved out of the house at that point. And we were sitting at the kitchen table. And I told my parents, look, I just wanted to let you know, as I'm getting ready to go off to college, that this is not what I'm going to be pursuing. I'm not going to go into the medical field anymore, that I really feel like I'm being called to full-time ministry. And here we were, y'all, like, hear me on this. We were a family that every time the doors of the church were open, we were there. Like, that's what I was raised on. My dad poured his life into the church as a volunteer. Same with my mom. And yet I will never forget in that moment two distinct things. And hear me, my dad did so many great things. But there are also lessons to be learned. Some of our greatest shortcomings can be catalysts for our kids' futures. I'll never forget how irrationally upset my father was in that moment. Like, the disappointment in his eyes at me breaking this news to him. He began to push back on me in the moment, like, Ben, no, you're not doing that. You don't want to do that. Do you realize what you're getting yourself into? Do you realize how little money you're going to make with your life? Do you realize what you're subjecting yourself to? Do you realize the people that you're going to have to deal with? He didn't know Corey, y'all, like, how good y'all are. He's like, Ben, you don't want to do that. Plus, I don't think that you're going to be good at doing that. And I'll never forget standing up from the kitchen table and walking back to my room as a 17-year-old kid, absolutely bawling, and just collapsing in my bed. As I laid there in my bed, I'll never forget my mother walking up to my room and sitting on the edge of my bed. She said, Ben, have I ever told you the story about when we found out that we were pregnant with you? She said, there I was at 38 years old, questioning, like, how in the world this could happen. There I was at 38 years old being chastised by my 12-year-old son, who, when we told him the news that we were pregnant again, looked at us and said, only crazy people have four kids. And questioning, like, why was this happening to us, and can we possibly do this again? And we'll be like old fogies by the time our kid's graduating from high school, and I don't know that we want to walk this path again. And she said, for one time in my life, I don't know that it's really ever happened like this, but I really felt like at one time in my life, as I was processing all this doubt and all these questions, that God spoke to me in the clearest way. And she said, I really felt like God was speaking that this child that you're having is going to change the world in ways that you haven't experienced in your family. It's going to be different than what you've experienced in your family. She said, for the first 17 years of your life, there still wasn't clarity on what that looked like and how God was bringing that about. But Ben, what I believe with all of my heart is that if you feel like this is what you're called to, and this is what you feel like God is pushing you towards, then even if I don't agree with it, and even if I see the struggle out in front of you, that I want you to know that I'm in your corner and that I'm pushing from behind you and that I believe in you. And in that moment, there was this communication from my mother. This communication into my life, into my story, into my future. And in the moments, even when I don't agree with you, as your parent, one of my responsibilities is to give you the freedom to discover that you were put on this earth for your own purpose. And to be the person that from behind you pushes you with all of my might in order for you to chase that with everything you've got. And in that moment, what I saw my mom embodying and living out were those three words. I don't get it, and Ben, I'm not so sure you get it, and you're making the smartest decision, but what I'm going to model to you is this. Love is patient. And I'm going to move at your pace. I'm going to stand beside you. And I'm going to support you at every turn. And I want what's best for you. Love is willing to put your future ahead of my ego. It loves by walking beside, helping from behind, but never dragging along. It has enough patience to recognize that our kid's purpose is not and should not be mine. And you see, when we can bring ourselves to parenting in that way, what we ultimately begin to find is that's how we become great parents who are capable of parenting in the 21st century. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for sending your son to put on flesh and blood, walk into the mess, to set this example of what it looked like to do relationship well. Relationship that was worth sacrificing your own ego. Relationship that was worth patience and slowing pace. Relationship that was worth allowing my children to discover their own unique purpose in this life. God, this morning I pray that for those of us who feel like maybe we're coming out of that stage, or for those of us who someday will be, God, I pray that we have the courage as parents to let go of our own pride, our own ego, and to parent with pace. To parent by putting our kids ahead of our own ego and our own reputation. God, I pray that we have the courage and the discernment to tackle that tension between teachable moments and defining moments in our parenting. And that, God, ultimately, we change our behavior so that we can become the best parents possible. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.